This week, Professor Chris McClellan is in the house. We're chatting caffeine. It's a good one. There's some really interesting stuff in this. We're talking strategies, how to use, when to use, what to do, looking at both physical and cognitive health. Let's get on. The truth is there. Listen to the research. Macca covers it all.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by Hydroxyburn Shred, Chaos, and Hydroxyburn Clinical, helping you smash your goals in and out of the gym. Hydroxyburn Shred is your daily thermogenic, designed to blast stubborn fat cells, increase energy, and suppress appetite. Need something to take your training to the next level? Chaos pre-workout delivers the strength, power, energy, and focus you need to smash your next session. Want more? Stack with Hydroxyburn Clinical for all-day energy and to reduce the stress, stopping you from losing weight.
We're back on deck at Body Science HQ. It's podcast time. With me, our favourite time-restricted, diurnal, intermittent, modified, keto, targeted fasting, Dr. Chris McClellan. How are you, mate?
Very well, thank you. What's going down? It's been a few weeks. I've been away.
You've been away? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, you know, something different. Good.
We're going to really hack in today on a big topic that we get asked a lot about here, caffeine.
Yep. I'll stay in my lane, but, you know, full disclosure, not a dietitian or nutrition aficionado.
So if you've been living in a bubble, caffeine's a natural stimulant found in coffee, tea, chocolate, and a very common additive to sports nutrition powders.
Absolutely. And if you look at the data, about 87% of people, adults, consume some form of caffeine on a daily basis in the order of, you know, 150 to 200 milligrams a day, which is interesting.
Mate, can we have a chat today on like the effects of caffeine, overdosing, coming down? You've got a good story on a couple of those. Long-term effects. Surely. Using caffeine for performance and metabolism. Any ingredients you think we should maybe talk about using it with, and withdrawals and your favourite, adrenal fatigue?
No. Oh, so for sure, we can talk through it. Absolutely. It kicked off with probably the most commonly used ergogenic aid on the planet, and it has been for quite some time. A lot of the early research, when we said we're going to talk about this, so I went through back through a few exercise physiology texts. I found some stuff. 1978 was a lot of the work from Kostel and a few other researchers that looked at it from a performance measure, and we'll talk through that because there's probably three primary mechanisms mostly associated with endurance type exercise and prolonged endurance.
Can I ask something here?
Yes.
What you don't think of endurance athletes or endurance exercise and caffeine?
Well, no, that's where it probably originated. It was the research has always been around glycogen sparing effectively within muscle and an increased utilization of lipid for energy fundamentally, and then that would prolong time to exhaustion, and that's been the very early work around endurance type training with caffeine. And there's a lot of it. If you look at PubMed, so PubMed are the international database for peer-reviewed research, which is where you want to go when people say they're talking about research.
Yep.
If it's not on PubMed, it didn't happen. I had a quick look last night, about 15,000 peer-reviewed papers on caffeine.
Wow. Yeah,
across all different sectors, across performance and health and well-being and all that sort of thing. So hugely investigated. We know a lot about it. I think we could spend a whole lot of time just talking about some of the myths, because there's a little bit of misunderstanding, I think, in terms of where it sits. There's always a little bit of hysteria around what it is and how dangerous it is or it isn't. We absolutely know that it's got a lot of benefits for health, and we'll get to that in a minute. Most of the research tells us that for the vast majority of people, pretty safe. If you're someone who's perhaps got a history of chronic disease, you know, heart disease, history of heart attacks, things like that, then for sure it's a stimulant, and we'll talk about what that even means in a minute. Anything that's stimulatory to your cardiorespiratory system or vascular system as well is something that you need to be considered of prior to putting it in your body. Any stimulant, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of common sense that goes into this, and it's a pretty dynamic space in terms of what our thought processes are. There's a whole lot of misunderstanding around how it perhaps interacts with some products. Like the first one I get a lot is creatine. You know, does it interfere with creatine? And I found one study that was done about 10 years ago that indicated that it may have a detrimental effect on creatine for strength power type sports. One. So I found about 15,000. I found one that said that there may be some detrimental effect. That's not enough evidence in my world to suggest that it's got any sort of negative effect on creatine utilization in strength and power. Caffeine for strength and power type sports is a little bit hit and miss anyway. You need fairly high dosages in the order of perhaps 6 to 7 milligrams per kilo of body mass.
Okay.
Which is substantial. And in fact, most of the work, the other one lends into intermittent type exercise. So repeated high intensity sprint type efforts.
Yep.
Where the reality with that type of exercise, and I talk about this a lot to students and exercise science people, it has to do with PCR, phosphocretin utilization, and anaerobic energy metabolism. Caffeine doesn't have a huge impact on that whole mechanistic side of how that works.
Okay.
So you would need to have, well, the research tells us in the order of 7 to 10 milligrams per kilo. That's a ton of caffeine. You're feeling crook on that, actually, because yeah, that's tipped you over any sort of, you know, psychomotor. So it's called a psychomotor stimulant. The psycho being the cognitive side of things, the motor being the performance side of things.
Yep.
Not psychotic or anything like that. But I think there's a tipping point. It's like the Yerkes-Dodson curve. There's an inverted bell curve. The Yerkes-Dodson law. Have you heard about that arousal?
I'll just nod and say yes.
Oh well, it's pretty much when it comes to arousal and performance. If you're under aroused, you're going to perform poorly. Would you agree?
I don't know.
Most likely, right?
Yeah.
If you're over-aroused, you're also going to perform pretty poorly. So there's a sweet spot that sits somewhere in there where you've got an optimum level of arousal. And
I thought that was a loaded question, mate. That's why I didn't go there.
No.
Yeah, sorry.
See, I'm professional and I'm keeping it on track. Yeah. I'm not sure how I got onto that. But if you're throwing around 10 milligrams per kilo of body mass.
10.
Well, 7 to 10. That's what we're hearing. You know, if you put that in perspective for the listeners, I'm about 100. What are you? How heavy are you?
Let's just work on 100 kilos so we can do the mass.
Yeah, but how heavy are you? Just so I want to do this accurately. What would you be rolling around at?
Oh, 100, let's just say 110.
110, so that's 235 pounds. Ish, 240 pounds. It's quality.
Anyway,
we'll work on 100 kilos.
Yep.
So that's 1,000 milligrams of caffeine, right? So if you take a no dose, which is a 100 milligram tab, you got 10 of them. So if you throw 10 of them in your mouth, you're going to not feel particularly well.
No.
If you put it in the Red Bull world or the Monster world, Red Bull's got about 80 milligrams.
80, I think, yeah.
80 milligrams of caffeine. Oh, no, do the math. What's that? 12.
Your pre-workouts are from 150 to 300?
Yeah.
Most
so
of them.
if you're rolling around 200, that's 5 scoops. So it's a pretty solid dose. And we do know, Greg, that when it comes to reading the labels of supplementary sports foods and so forth. Well, a scoop, what's a scoop? Here we go. This is a good question for the viewers.
Here we go.
So it says one scoop. In my world, a scoop may or may not have a heaped
absolutely
top. So is that a full scoop or is it do I run a spoon across the top and level it out? Is it a level scoop or is it a scoop where there's a little bit falling off the side?
Yeah, look, when you look at labeling, it shouldn't say one scoop. It should say the exact dose.
Yes, yeah. Which would be like a 5 gram.
The scoop may not be suitable for the dose, so
right,
because there's only so many scoops you can buy in the world.
Yeah, true.
And every powder's got a different density.
It's a rough guide anyway, though. In my world, if you said to me, Macca, throw 2 scoops in, I might have 3.
Yours would be loaded scoops too. They wouldn't be.
Yeah, it might be a scoop. So the question is a scoop a scoop? Mm. And that's the question. Anyway, so far off track, it's not funny. So caffeine as a psychomotor stimulant, hugely popular around the world. We're talking about this before we even started around, is there a safe dose?
That's a big question.
It's a massive question. And this is where perhaps the traditionalists of the world may want to debate the point. So we will provide documentary evidence to support anything we present in this podcast. And I'm not endorsing anything one way or another. I'm just going to report the research. And it tells us that up to 400 milligrams a day presents no adverse health effects.
A day or a serve?
No, 400 milligrams a day.
No, I'm just checking that out.
400 milligrams a day, which you can have in one serve if you want, I suppose. 400 milligrams a day, no adverse health risks in otherwise healthy populations.
So good for well-being.
You know, we can get into a conversation around health. But, I mean, let's just break it down first. So caffeine, the real name, the proper name is 1,3-7-trimethylxanthine. So it's part of the xanthine group.
Can I go and get my cup of
1,3-7-trimethylxanthine? I think you should.
I don't think that it works.
There's 3 methyls. There's 3 methyl groups that are on a parent xanthine compound. It's pretty simple chemistry.
Okay.
Yeah, you could draw that with a few little images there. The beauty of caffeine as a lot of people call it a drug. I call it an ergogenic aid, but if we want to, is it a drug?
Well, it's listed as a drug in a lot of literature.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you were performing at the Olympics prior to 2004, you would have been calling it a drug because if 12 millimole, was it micromole? Micromole, over 12, I think it was an adverse doping test. So you'd be filthy if you had a positive dope because of caffeine in 1996.
A bit of chocolate.
And you had one too many coffees, but pretty easy to do, I would suggest, and we'll talk about, that lends into a conversation around uptake and half-life and things like that.
Because it's in everything, caffeine, really.
It's in everything, absolutely everywhere. And that's where we're going to talk about how you can have some adverse findings, definitely depending on with different populations and where it's sourced from. And I think pre-workouts get a bad rap. I think energy drinks get a bad rap. You've got to read the research properly because it's very easy. Like with any data, that data can be interpreted and perhaps skewed one way or another, depending on the agenda of whoever's interpreting
Absolutely.
The data. That's why when people say to me, oh, research says that you know, energy drinks are bad for you.
I go, 15,000 of them?
No, energy drinks, not caffeine.
Oh, sorry.
Big difference.
Yeah, massive.
And I'll say, well, what research? Show it to me and let's have a conversation about it. Because I think there's a skill in being able to read research. And that's what I tell students that come through university programs. If they leave and all they can do is read a paper, interpret a paper, and critically appraise the literature and make good decisions, I think, you know, I've done a good job, because that's not always a given. So I always read the research myself. If someone cites the work of Greg Young, I'm going to download that paper and I'm going to go and read it and make some decisions for myself, because it's really easy to skew it. And that's happening right now with caffeine and energy drinks, big time, and artificial sweeteners and all that sort of stuff. Like the research on artificial sweeteners for adverse health effects, and you would have seen this, it's been pretty well populated, done on mice. The doses were enormous, so much so that it'd be almost impossible for a human to consume those levels of artificial sweeteners. And then you get into a conversation with the zealots around gut health and gut microbiome. I don't know if we're going to go there today, but
you've started it.
You know, because people say that the energy drinks, well, they say the caffeine's bad for you. I say prove it, because it's not. And then they'll say, well, the artificial sweeteners are bad for you, and I'll say prove it, because they aren't. Well, if they are, it's not. No one's slam dunked that in my world yet, and I'm happy if any of the readers want to send in papers that absolutely quantify it, and do not send me something from the Egyptian, you know, journal of something I was going to say.
PubMed only, guys.
Yeah, I mean, proper literature. Yep. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions around that. Anyway, but the beauty of caffeine is that it's got really good uptake. It's almost 100% absorbed. One of the good things, probably the best vehicle to deliver caffeine is actually gum, chewing gum.
Okay.
And I know certainly the military have used that for guys are deployed overseas and things like that. You get a good uptake through the buccal glands and through the salivary glands. So really good absorption. And even within the intestines, almost 100%. So really well absorbed. Most drugs or substances that we consume have to go through the liver. We call it a first pass to get into the circulation. So caffeine doesn't have to do that. So it's not sort of limited by that. So we get a really good uptake, peak levels within perhaps 30 to 45 minutes, maybe 60 minutes. That's going to be impacted by how you take it.
Yeah.
And if you have a meal with it versus, you know, an energy drink versus a pre-workout versus a capsule versus whatever. The less things that can interfere with absorption, the better.
So can I just ask you, if we're using it as a pre-workout?
Yeah.
30 minutes before we train?
Perfect, yeah.
And definitely not eating, you said food can affect it?
I wouldn't eat with it. I don't think a lot of people eat much.
Not half an hour, but anyway. What if I ate 2 hours before? Oh, 3 hours before?
Again, it probably depends what you ate with digestion rates, but most of that would be cleared.
Okay.
Maybe if you had a keto box and had a whole lot of protein, it's probably going to take a little bit longer to absorb. But for the most part, you'd be fine with that.
Have a meal before you go, pre-workout. Yeah.
If you're going to have a serious training session, you probably don't want an enormous amount of food in your gut anyway. I mean, I don't eat an hour or two before a workout.
Some people do.
So it's not really a big issue.
I'm just trying to work out for the people like
how to use caffeine. If you can have a meal an hour or two before your workout, you have your caffeine maybe 30 minutes before your workout, you should have peak levels around about the time you start. The half-life of caffeine, which half-life gets a little bit confused, it's the time that it takes to reduce the saturation or the quantity of a circulating metabolite in your blood by half, by 50%. So we'll go to 50%, then half of 50%, then half of 25%, then half of 12, and then half of 6.25, et cetera, et cetera. So again, with caffeine, it's pretty long. It gets into your system very quickly, and it's in your system for variable, but around 2.5 to up to 5 hours.
Is that right?
Yeah. So if you're topping it up throughout the day, you will have high levels of circulating caffeine throughout the day. No question. I think that's where it would have been easy to have a positive doping test back in the day.
Absolutely.
If you had, because you could have had, I don't know, let's say you couldn't accidentally have too much caffeine though, because back in those days, there weren't a lot of pre-workouts anyway, I wouldn't have thought. What's the evolution of pre-workouts?
They've been around a while.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, you can't accidentally have 15 coffees, I wouldn't have thought, unless you got one of those really big.
What about busy day?
Well, I know you were talking me through a minute ago. You have more caffeine than I do, which is quite the achievement. But what are those big, does Body Science have them? The big sort of half a gallon.
You've been in America,
flasks,
haven't you? You're talking gallons.
No, or 2 litre, 3 litre flasks, which people drink, swig on while they're doing their workout.
Yeah, we did. They're very popular at the moment.
They are. Mm. That's a lot of fluid to drink while you're doing weights. don't you think? I would have thought.
You're the expert, mate.
It is. Yeah, anyway. Okay. So what's interesting though, Greg, is there are some things that will also impact on it. Tobacco, right? Although we're, I suppose, mostly going to be listened to by the health and fitness community, there may be some persons who smoke cigarettes that listen to these podcasts. Here's the bad news. If you start your day with a couple of cigarettes and a cup of coffee, the cigarettes will reduce the uptake of your caffeine by 50%. Up to 70%, but at least 50%.
Is that right? Well, so, I'm going to throw a little rule out here. How about you just drop the cigarettes?
Well, I mean, that's a bolt of lightning right there, mate. My question is, because I don't know the answer to this, but I pondered this mm-hmm. as I just spoke just then.
Yep.
Do electronic cigarettes have tobacco in them?
I don't know. I've never had a smoking addiction.
If the electronic cigarettes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about,
yeah. If they have tobacco, because I thought that's why you had them, because they had the tobacco but not all the other stuff. The tobacco will impede your uptake of caffeine. Get off the coffin nails and drink your coffee and you'll be fine.
Go for a walk.
No first pass through the liver, so it's really good. And then ultimately caffeine is metabolized in the liver. It's the site. There's actually an enzyme. It's called a P450 oxidase enzyme. There are a few of these things called dimethylxanthines, which doesn't matter too much, but there's a paraxanthine, which is about 84% of the methylxanthines that are broken down from caffeine, and they increase lipolysis is where I'm heading with this. Yeah. So they play a role in thermogenesis and plays a role in utilization of fat fundamentally. So I know it's in a lot of the thermogenics. Caffeine's in the body science thermogenic, I would imagine.
It is,
for
yep.
sure. Yeah, of course. I should know because I drink it every day. People talk to me about, metabolism, right? Because everyone goes, oh, well, caffeine increases your metabolism. And you know me, I'm a fairly mechanistic dude. I want to know, I say, why? How does that happen? So we know that there is a catecholamine induced. So noradrenaline and adrenaline induced increase. So catecholamines, I suppose, the fundamental stimuli for flight or fight response.
Yep.
Okay. So that's basically increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, things like that. So caffeine in sedentary people will increase your metabolic rate on the back of a catecholamine induced increase in heart rate and blood pressure by 9 calories an hour. Now it's not very much on its own, but it's still better than nothing, right? And it is dose dependent. That will go up with a higher dose. I suppose what I'm saying is there is a bona fide thermogenic effect of caffeine. And so when you're talking about, well, what do we put in these products? There's an absolute slam dunk justification for the use of caffeine in a thermogenic and a pre-workout. The other thing people carry on a fair bit about with caffeine in pre-workouts, I'm on a rant, hey?
No.
Have you spoken yet?
No. It's all about pre-workouts.
So caffeine is a vasoconstrictor, right? It constricts the vascular system fundamentally. Whereas if you want to pump, you're thinking vasodilation, mm-hmm. right? You're thinking more blood into the working muscle. So people think, well, if I have caffeine, that's going to stuff up my workout and I'm not going to get a pump. I don't know about you, but I don't have any problems getting a pump, taking a pre-workout. I do on keto. Did you have that problem on keto?
No.
Didn't you have that problem? I had that problem. I don't know if any of the listeners, any sort of keto people listening, but...
So are we dropping keto out of this?
No. The keto's... I'm modified keto. I like my keto, but I can't stay on keto because I felt flat as a tack. I probably didn't stay with it, you know, the keto flu or whatever you want to call it. I felt fine, psychologically, mentally, all that, mental acuity, all good, everything's great. I actually felt really good on keto, but I couldn't get a pump. I was flat as a tack. And, you know, 5, 6, 7 scoops of pre-workout and still no pump.
Yeah, you probably got to look at your diet when you're doing that and go, is keto working for me?
Well, I was exaggerating. I was looking for someone to bite with the things. I suppose you have to have an understanding of how...
You like lifting heavy though, like you lift heavy.
Yeah, I lift pretty heavy.
What's your saying? We're not here to pick cherries or
something?
Well,
you're not going to get big picking cherries,
that's
mate.
That's it.
It's as simple as that, right?
Someone actually asked me to put that on a t-shirt for you the other day.
Well, some things in life are just truisms that cannot be escaped. That's just one of them. Well, if you want to grow, and we talked about this in a previous podcast, if you want hypertrophy, there are some inconvenient realities that are necessary. One is mechanotransduction. You need to mechanically load muscle.
Yep.
You need metabolic adaptation. People will argue that a bit at the moment, but until I'm convinced otherwise, you still need metabolic adaptation. By that, I mean hydrogen ion proliferation. I mean lactate adaptations, things like that. Hydrogen ions, we know, stimulate growth hormone. We know stem cell proliferation. We know, you know, the donation of mononuclei from myogenic stem cells. We know all that stuff. We went through that.
I'm glad you know that.
Well, we know that. And that's part of it, right? You need trauma. You need some trauma. You need an element of inflammation to facilitate the whole healing process. And that's where, when I talk about recovery, because there are some recovery modalities that are very popular, cold water immersion, cryotherapy, all that sort of stuff. When I'm talking about recovery, and this has got nothing to do with caffeine, I'm on a massive rant. The first question I ask is, what are you recovering from, right? So if you've been out and it's 35 degrees Celsius outside, middle of the day, and you've just done, you know, a high intensity interval workout, running or something like that, then you want to drop your core temp, you want to rehydrate, refuel, all that sort of stuff, right? You're not going to have a huge amount of micro trauma in muscle. But if you've just done a set of chest, what are you doing? Chest and biceps? What are you doing?
Why not?
What's your go-to?
Mate, I'm doing more. Your
favorite. Don't you say functional?
Functional training on my journey.
Well, when the rest of us are doing heavy chest and buys or tries or whatever you want to combine with. See, I don't go chest and everyone goes chest and buys. Why would you do that? Well, if you smash your chest sufficiently, but if you smash your chest sufficiently, you're going to recruit a fair bit of try. So by the time I get the triceps, they're gone. So what's the point? Unless I'm going to do try first, in which case they're gone before I get to chest. These are inconvenient things. Anyway, so what I'm saying to you in a long, long-winded rant here is that if you want to grow, if you want muscle hypertrophy is important to you, do not leave the gym and get in an ice bath. Go and put your compression on, go and rehydrate, go and refuel, all that, day out an ice bath. Ice baths attenuate inflammation. Cryotherapy attenuates inflammation, which attenuates healing.
We probably need to look at doing a podcast on that because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around.
There's a huge amount.
That recovery process.
And there's a lot of research on it and it's been done. It's slam dunk. There's no sort of room for, you know, argument. It is what it is. So I think you asked me at the start, how does caffeine work? Did you ask me that?
I did. It was about caffeine.
Yeah. We were talking about caffeine.
This podcast is about caffeine.
Yeah.
So that was a great rant.
Sorry. Yeah, I love a rant.
No, I loved it. So, mate, you obviously... smashing pre-workout before you train?
Before podcasts.
Yeah, before you podcast, before you train.
Yeah, no, you got to have it before you... Well, yes. I am a advocate of the pre-workout. Can I train without it? Probably. Yeah. Do I want to? No. Do I need to? Are there any adverse health effects? No. Does it assist me get through my workouts? Yes, I think so. I like to think I train pretty heavy for a...
I've seen in the gym you do.
For a decent... And the pre-workout, well, I think it helps my workout. So does it have... There's no adverse effects. Doesn't stop you getting a pump, no big deal. Caffeine, three main effects, I suppose, what you asked me at the very start. We've always thought an increased mobilization of what's called intracellular calcium, and I'll talk to you a bit about that. The other one was an inhibition of what's called phosphoesterdiases, which is more around the catecholamine response, which is the adrenaline, noradrenaline response. And the third one, which is... probably the most commonly known / associated with the cognitive side of caffeine. So I think there's in terms of the mental focus, in terms of all of that sort of thing, I find it, you know, pretty beneficial. Is caffeine as a trimethylxanthine antagonistically binds with adenosine receptors, mainly in the basal ganglia, in the brain. Antagonistically means it blocks them. It binds with them and does the opposite.
Like stops drowsiness.
That's exactly what it does.
Yeah.
Adenosine, it's a purine. Adenosine is associated with drowsiness. So by blocking adenosine receptors, it blocks drowsiness. So it's like a double entendre? I don't even know. It's a double negative.
Yeah.
So yeah, very much it's a stimulatory sort of response that we see. With regard to the mobilization of intracellular calcium, we know that calcium sensitizes the contractile apparatus within muscle. So we've talked about that in the past, actin and myosin, the little things that cross bridging across and what's called excitation contraction coupling. And when a muscle shortens, it develops force. So we know that caffeine sensitizes those little apparatus to, I suppose, be more forceful is probably a really simple way to describe it. An increased mobilization of intracellular calcium that comes from the sarcoplasmic reticulum within the muscle. So a little action potential comes down through a thing called the T-tubule, gets to the sarcoplasmic reticulum, releases calcium. That calcium then has an impact on the orientation of those little contractile elements within the muscle, and they produce force, really simply. Now, because of the increased sensitization of that, there is a element of reduced fatigue. Is it going to make you way stronger? Probably not. But will it enable you to maintain the outputs of your workout? So, you know, can I get three sets of 100 kilos out instead of two sets?
Yep.
The answer is probably yeah. It's going to help you with that. With regard to inhibition of things called phosphodiesterases or PDEs, we're getting into a conversation now around catecholamine. So caffeine is a competitive inhibitor of these things called, and they're cyclic nucleotide phosphodiesterases. I know it's a big mouthful, but what it does...
I can't believe you can remember that.
It inhibits cyclic AMP, CAMP. And by inhibiting the breakdown of these phosphodiesterases, I'm just going to call them PDEs, what that does then, it has an impact on the accumulation of cyclic AMP, and that then has a stimulatory effect on catecholamines. Catecholamines, adrenaline, noradrenaline, then has an increase in blood pressure, heart rate, increased metabolism, flight or fight response.
Yep.
So I've got mobilization of calcium, I can produce force. I've got more of this adrenaline response. And the third one is I've got less drowsiness. So I've got adenosine receptors. Adenosine receptors is pretty cool how that works. But basically there are four G protein coupled adenosine receptors, mainly within the basal ganglia, part of the brain. They're sort of throughout the brain, really, periphery of the brain, into the cortex and so forth. But there's A1, A2A, A2B, and an A3. Fundamentally, there's a preferential binding of caffeine with the A1 and the 2A. Now, they play a role. Well, the other thing that's interesting is that habitual caffeine users have more of these receptors. There's an upregulation of the receptors from long-term use of caffeine. What is habitual caffeine use?
I was going to ask you, what's habitual?
So technically, anyone who uses 400 milligrams a day or thereabouts for more than 5 consecutive days.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of people.
I'm in there.
I'm in there as well. And so caffeine's non-selective though. It hits all of those receptors, but its preference is the A1s. So when the A1s are activated, normally when an A1 receptor, adenosine receptor, because it's drowsiness, it promotes sleep. So the caffeine gets in the way of that. So it'll help you not sleep, which is why you shouldn't probably take your pre-workout at 7 o'clock at night. The reason you can't sleep is because you've got preferential blocking of A1 adenosine receptors within your brain, mm-hmm. and you're alert. That's why you take caffeine. That's probably the main effect.
Absolutely.
And even when it comes to sports performance, because with that comes a perception of pain, a perception of fatigue, and there's a whole lot of perceptual variation that occurs with that. I'm more wakeful, so I've got an increased amount of wakefulness as a term, and so I'm buzzed, I'm stimulated, and that's the stimulus. And the stimulus is a blocking of drowsiness, less so than a bona fide, I'm going to ramp up some stimulus here. You follow me?
Yeah, that's making sense.
Yeah. So the A1 receptors, as I said, cerebellum, hypothalamus, the hippocampus, the cortex, all those areas of the brain that I know you love those. The A2 types are more around the striatum. There's a dopamine adaptation. There's D1, D2 receptors, so they're dopamine receptors. Yep. So the A2 has a bit more of an impact on dopamine function. Again, I mentioned right back at the start that there's adenosine receptors actually reduce things like serotonin, things like those neurotransmitters, acetylcholine, dopamine, etc. So by blocking those receptors, we're actually getting more of those.
Yep.
So there's a lot of positives coming out of that is probably what I would suggest to you. And so it's complicated. It's complex physiology, but there are three effective mechanisms. The main one, though, is the adenosine receptors that will, instead of inhibiting things like serotonin and acetylcholine, we're now getting a stimulatory effect. So improved mood, stuff like that.
Yeah, positives.
Yeah, or much more positive than negative. And so there's a whole lot of stuff there. Interesting, a lot of people with caffeine need to go to the toilet.
So we get asked that question a lot.
The laxative effect?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing, right? What I didn't know...
You're going to dump some science on us here?
No, it's not even that hardcore science, but...
Dump some science.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sorry, you dodged that. You're not going to talk about that?
There's a thing called cholinergic acid that's been implicated in the whole process of... So it's located within prunes. So there is it has a laxative effect.
Yep.
So one of the things, it's an active component of coffee.
Okay.
Right? So coffee more so than caffeine.
Yep.
That's probably the difference, right? So caffeine's in coffee. Coffee isn't caffeine. Everyone's aware of that, right?
I think a lot of people probably learned something then.
But the other thing is that we talk about different types of caffeine, anhydrous, etc. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Caffeine, in terms of what I've just talked about with adenosine receptors and that sort of thing, doesn't matter how you get your caffeine.
Yep.
Caffeine, as far as how your body interprets it, is caffeine.
Caffeine's caffeine.
Yeah. But coffee, if you're drinking coffee, there's the cholinergic acid that's also in prunes that does a couple of things, one of which it acts on, well, basically submucous nerves and what are called gastric myenteric structures within the gut that increases gastric emptying fundamentally. And so you get an influx of gastric digestive metabolites and all this sort of thing, small intestines. You get what's called a gastrocolic reflux. Makes you want to go to the toilet. What's also interesting, and I only learned this when I was reading because I thought you might ask me about it, is that there is an actual increase in anal sphincter contraction power. The anal sphincter.
You just want to say that again?
Well, I said it quickly because I don't really want to talk about it. Anyway, there are a number of concurrent actions taking place within the gut and around the sphincter that make you want to defecate.
That's why people go to the toilet after a morning coffee.
Yeah. So don't have prunes with your coffee.
Wow.
And don't have caffeine-loaded prune juice. I think that could be pretty nasty. You also asked me, I think you said at the very start, individual variation.
Yeah, that's a big one.
So we do have probably responders and non-responders. Some people just go, nah, it does nothing for me. Other people say, one coffee and I'm all jittery and can't do anything. I mentioned it all gets broken down and mobilized within the liver. There's that P450 enzyme I mentioned, and there's actually an enzyme. It's a CYP1A, I think it is. is, enzyme. I should double check that. But basically, we have a genetic variation of this enzyme. It's an aromatase version of this enzyme, the CYP1A, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And individuals who have that polysynaptic morphism, which is a genetic trait, have a basically they metabolize caffeine more quickly than people who don't have that.
Okay.
So I've had that test. You've never had it, have you?
No,
okay. So I've done the gene test to see whether I have it. Because I could drink 5 cups of coffee at midnight, go straight to sleep. Doesn't seem to much for me, right? And I know I'm a habitual user, and I know that habitual users do have a reduced effect. I know people say there's research that doesn't support that, but there's research that would absolutely confirm that for us. Anyway, so about 46% of people have this trait, this genetic trait. So it's pretty common.
Half of us.
Yeah, almost half, yeah. There are some populations that don't metabolize caffeine pretty well. Ethiopians, believe it or not, they have a very low xanthine. So I mentioned it's a dimethyl xanthine or trimethyl xanthine. So if you don't oxidize xanthine very well, you don't metabolize caffeine very well. So Japanese, Caucasian, surprisingly enough, and Spanish people. So,
is that right?
Yeah, apparently. That's what the research says. That's what I've sort of plucked out of that. So there is an absolute categoric genetic trait that's associated with being able to metabolize it more or less. And so you can be guaranteed, if you're someone who's really hypersensitive to caffeine, that you're a slow metabolizer, I would say, which means, you know, it's still in your system very quickly. You're going to digest it very quickly, but it's going to be there for a long time.
Yeah, okay.
And there's a whole, there's a lot of other things that impact on it. Pregnancy is a big one, probably a conversation around health and, you know, safe levels. And I mentioned at the start that 400 milligrams in otherwise healthy populations is considered safe, not necessarily for pregnant women. The recommendations are lower than that. You know, around about under 300 milligrams is considered pretty safe. The thing with pregnancy is that the half-life is dramatically increased by, you know, fivefold. So,
is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It could be in your system for 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours. So, and I think it's a fairly unsubstantiated space because it's pretty hard to research on pregnant people.
You're a pretty game person to throw on that research around.
Even, you know, there are some levels that I'm not going to get into because it's probably appropriate not to, but there are some levels in the research that are associated with really adverse outcomes with pregnancy. And I would encourage people to read around that. But higher doses, over 300 milligrams, you don't want to be in that neighborhood if you're a pregnant woman. That would be my recommendation. I would keep it under 300 milligrams because of the
what's going to happen if we go over?
Well,
what does the research say?
Well, the research says that there are levels that can lead to spontaneous abortion.
Wow.
Yeah, it's dire. That's why I'm saying the recommendations, you know, you would not want to be in the 400 milligram neighborhood.
Anywhere near it.
Don't go anywhere near it. That would be I'm not a medical practitioner, but based on the research that Gaston and others has really confirmed that you don't want to be anywhere near that.
If you're pregnant, you don't know what you're doing, go see a doctor.
Yeah, 100%. Before you do anything, go and see a doctor.
Especially if you're trying to get pregnant too.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of the impact on the fetus, it's probably, I don't think it's really been that well substantiated, but it's probably due to the fact that because it's circulating for longer, maybe there's an impact. I don't know the answer to that. But again, that's where you go and see your obstetrician, you know, and you have a conversation with them around all that sort of thing. And at all times be super, super safe.
Is there any research about breastfeeding mothers?
I haven't read it, to be perfectly honest. Dodge
it then.
I can't answer it, but I would say absolutely categorically it would appear in the breast milk. Definitely.
Okay. That's a big one.
That would be the other big one. In terms of positive health benefits, there's great evidence around reduced risk of Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
There's great evidence around reductions of cirrhosis of the liver, colorectal cancer, liver cancer, skin cancers, things like that. There's good research in primates and Parkinson's disease.
Imagine being in that one, throwing some caffeine in some apes.
Yeah, that could probably get pretty messy. But
any videos we can watch there?
I don't know about that one, but it's mainly around the A2A adenosine receptor antagonistic function and dopamine function. Because we know, Parkinson's is basically a loss of what are called dopaminergic neurons within a particular part of the brain called the substantia nigra, N-I-G-R-A, pars compactium, which is an area of the brain that has a drop in dopamine levels. And we know there's a characteristic tremor and all of that sort of thing. So the evidence in humans is not as well established as it is in some of the primates.
Yep.
So I think in humans, and again, I think you'd probably look at it as a complementary type therapy more so than a bona fide treatment strategy,
yep.
but promising in terms of what's out there. The other one that's interesting is reduced risk of heart attack or heart disease.
Is that right?
Yeah, so there's a big meta-analysis done in 2012. 4 cups of coffee reduced your risk of heart attack by 11%.
Wow.
Yeah, 1 to 3 cups of coffee reduced your risk of heart attack by between 4 and 10%. But again, when it comes to too much of a good thing not being a good thing necessarily, there was some evidence that over 11 cups a day does create an increase in risk. Minor, but still are at increased risk.
So what's that in milligrams of caffeine?
Probably. It depends on how you drink your coffee, but up to 800 milligrams
yep,
okay. in a day. A lot of people get
that. There'd
be
a lot of people hitting that easily.
Yeah, it was slight, but you know. There's some other issues. People who are, there's a thing called basically an increased amount of anxiety that comes with caffeine in persons who otherwise don't have anxiety-related disorders. It actually seems to be a genetic thing around that A2 receptor again. And then there's a thing called a 1976TC genotype that is associated with that. And so there's a genetic propensity for an increased amount of anxiety when they don't have any other anxiety disorders, just with caffeine gives them anxiety. That's interesting. Interesting. Anyway, the other one's weight loss. I mentioned 4 milligrams per kilo, about 8 to 9 calories per hour in terms of metabolic thermogenesis,
yep.
which is kind of cool. That's mostly on the back of a catecholamine response I mentioned, which is the catecholamine response. If we go back another level, it was the PDE, the phosphodiesterase. Mm-hmm. If we really want to get technical. So
and we love technical.
Well, cyclic AMP. So when someone says to me, how does it increase your thermogenesis? Yeah. Well, it basically inhibits PDEs. That increases cyclic AMP. That increases catecholamines. It increases your heart rate and your blood pressure. Side effects, all the usual suspects. You know, people get a bit jittery. They get gastrointestinal upsets, things like that. Nausea, nervousness. You can have, you know, someone asked
me. When I'm getting jitters, what's actually happening?
You are having probably a hyper-responsive effect to, you're having a heightened cognitive stimulus. So your adenosine receptors mm-hmm. are being overloaded. So you're getting that anxiety associated with that with increased heart rate response. So you're having an increased flight or fight response.
Yep.
And that almost like that caffeine-induced anxiety that occurs when you sort of just get really jittery and can't sit still. So your metabolism's gone up. You've got a catecholamine response and your receptors have been antagonistically blocked. So you get an increased dopamine response. You're buzzed and you don't tolerate that particularly well.
And you've had an experience here yourself, haven't you?
I have had several experiences.
We started touching that earlier.
Well, but, yeah. I mean, when it comes down to fatal dose, how much is a fatal dose of caffeine? The literature tells us between 36 and 40 milligrams per kilo. 100 kilos, give or take, 4,000 milligrams of caffeine.
You are smashing some serious caffeine
level. Well, you're going to hurt yourself. Mm. And so the experience that I've had, what you probably 2000...
This is always ask before you steal something, kids.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get the kids in a minute.
No, not but, kids. I'm talking about Macca came in the R&D lab one day and we had a pre-workout.
No, but it was there for me. There was no theft involved.
We had a new pre-workout.
So back in
out.
The day, what year would that
be? Let's tell it just straight up. Let's just
2000, maybe 2009, came in, new chaos about product research and development taking
place. And you were sending it to the UK to get drug tested.
It was getting a drug test. I was also operating as a clandestine factory pilot for body science. Someone's got to take a hit with a new product, right? Yeah. Someone's got to, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Be the, what is it? Who was the dude that tested the meals of the king back in the day?
Yeah, I don't know how that rolls.
Well, I don't know how that rolls either. But anyway. So I walk in and there's a black tub and they said, that's the new Chaos Macca. Rip in. Righto. Away I go. So I go home. It just says Chaos. K-O-S. Nothing else.
Hmm.
So I crack it open. Looks fair enough to me. It's got a scoop in there. And I remember looking at it thinking, that's a relatively large scoop for a pre-workout.
Had a protein scoop in it.
It had a protein scoop in it, which was around about a 20 gram serve,
yep.
give or take. Most pre-workout serves are about the 5 to 10 gram, yep. give or take. Yep. They're a little scoop. And anyone, everyone knows what I'm talking about here. You get your proteins, a big scoop, little pre-workout's normally a little scoop. Anyway, no instructions. So usually.
It's because we had no idea you'd taken it.
Well, yeah. I mean, so two scoops is usually what most people do.
So what'd you do?
Well, I had two scoops of the big one. So I've had a 40 gram serve of what probably should have been a 5 to 10 gram serve, yeah. 300 milligrams per serve. So what if you do the math on that, about 2,500 milligrams of caffeine. I may or may not have already had several energy drinks that day. And so I reckon I was rolling around 2,800, 2,900 milligrams of caffeine. At the time, I was probably 110 kilos.
And was rolling the word there you just said? said? I was rolling.
Rolling. No, no, I was shredded. I was absolutely peeled. I was a walking anatomy specimen.
I was more talking after the 2,800 milligrams of caffeine.
Oh, after the 2,800 milligrams of caffeine. No, no, I drove myself to the A&E.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those times in life, you know, one of those times in life, I don't know if you ever had one, Gregory, where you go, I'm in trouble. Something is not right. And so...
How long after you took the, not long, the overdose?
I reckon 30 minutes. Yeah, and I was thinking, blurred vision.
Did you try eating or anything? Did you try anything good?
No, I didn't. I was going to go train. And then I thought, I was driving myself to the gym and I thought, I probably need to take a detour and just go to A&E. Went there, they hooked me up to the, did an ECG, did all the usual thing. I was fine. Oh, I had a little bit of increased cardiac output.
How's your vision?
At the time. Yeah, no, I was blurred.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, blurred vision. Didn't vomit. I was pretty crooked though. I didn't have diarrhea or anything.
Okay. But
no, not from memory. Anyway.
Did you go to sleep that night?
Eventually. But good lesson learned there to always
read the label and stay true to the label.
Ask questions and exactly. Don't go crazy. What is interesting though, because that leads into a conversation around some of the, what I consider to be hysteria around caffeine. And
there is a lot of hysteria around caffeine.
Well, yeah. I mean that it's not necessarily very good for you potentially. I have read very little around that being the case. And if you do look, if you read in and you dig into the science, if you look at the data, the most data that I can find comes from places like the National Poison Data Center in the US, who publish their data on a yearly basis. Okay,
have you got any data from, you got any facts from there that we can?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the American National Poison Data System, so this was published in the Clinical Toxicology Journal in 2013, and it was an analysis of energy drink toxicity, basically. Mm-hmm. And so along the lines of this perhaps level of hysteria around how bad energy drinks are for you. Okay, 2.3 million calls to that center around caffeine-related toxicity, right? And everyone goes, wow, that's terrible. 2.3 million calls, that's really, really bad. But if you dig into the research, 50%, half of those calls, so 1.15 million calls related to the overdose of children under six.
Stop it.
Taken
under
energy drinks. Yeah. So you got half of those calls on kids. So who gives, you got to ask yourself, right? Who gives their four-year-old a can of Monster forget the brand. Who gives their four-year-old a can of energy drink for breakfast? Seriously. And what's also incredibly alarming on top of that, another 15%. So for a total of, another 15% were kids under 12. So 65% of all adverse findings relating to
12-year-old under.
12 or under.
Wow.
So only 30-odd percent relate to the rest of the population over the age of 12. So that tells me that, you know, there's some skewed data that floats around with regard to how bad it is. I mean, you just got to ask yourself. That means the average 10-year-old, if you go on the recommendations of this, Lovello and others have told us that, or it might be Gaston, I can't remember, but we can put the research on the at the end of the transcript. They say about 2.5 milligrams per kilo. I wouldn't be giving kids any caffeine.
What, for kids?
Yeah. I wouldn't be giving
someone's
them any.
Someone's actually measured that.
Yeah, I know. How do you do that, right?
Wow.
So that's a 10-year-old.
I've seen those kids out, though.
Well, you think about it, mate. Like, I know they don't sell a lot of energy drinks in tuck shops anymore, and I think they've stopped selling things like iced coffees. But, you know, you can get an iced coffee at the local petrol station.
Yeah, caffeine
500
loaded.
Mils. Yep. It's loaded with caffeine. Yeah. Like 500 milligrams of caffeine in it. That's double what a pre-workout has. Mm. And that's in a milk-based drink.
So you can see how a kid could make the mistake.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. And an adult could probably easily inadvertently give it to a little
not
kid.
Not even knowing, yeah.
Not even knowing. Yeah. So, you know, there's a few things there that are interesting.
They'd know not long after they gave it to them, though.
Well, you wouldn't want it, right? They'd be bouncing off the things. Anyway, it's just food for thought, I suppose. It's interesting in terms of how that data looks. But for the most part, you know, by way of summary, we know that it's a good psychomotor stimulant. We know that it's generally not associated with a large amount of health adverse findings, provided you keep the dosages, you know, relatively low, I suppose. Mm-hmm. We always say proceed with caution, and if you've got anything going on, you need to get clearance from a doctor and all that sort of
thing. Absolutely.
In terms of memory, and there's not a lot of good data that says that it does much for your memory, but there's some data around vigilance and attention span that is I only mention it because there is a little bit of data that suggests that we do have some improvements in what are called lower order cognitive function, things like reaction time. You know, drinking a Red Bull is not going to make you have a better memory. Mm-hmm. Might give you wings, but it won't give you a better memory.
Yep.
So things like that necessary, but that's not why you take it. You know, it's a caffeine drink for a stimulant, and it does that very well. Good uptake, rapid uptake in the system for a relatively long period of time, and has some physical benefits associated with, but also some cognitive benefits. I would just say to people, to be open-minded. When you hear about research, you know, the sky is not always falling, and just to be open-minded around it.
So would your athletes be using caffeine?
100%.
Yep.
And, you know, you get into a conversation. You mentioned adrenal fatigue at the start, and I'll probably just come back to it around cortisol. People who are, they call them naive users of caffeine. If someone never, ever takes any caffeine, right, and you give them a therapeutic dose, let's say we give you 4 milligrams per kilo. So you're 70 kilos, I'm going to give you 250. You take a pre-workout,
yep.
Never had it before in your life. I don't think it's an unreasonable expectation to think that that's going to have a fairly significant
game
impact.
On.
Of course it is, right? So will you get a spike in cortisol? Of course you will.
Yep.
You know, probably, you know, they'll say 200%. 200% spike in cortisol is nothing,
okay.
Really. In the big scheme of things, half-life 60 minutes. We talked about this before. Yep. Residual effect. The caffeine will stay high. The cortisol won't. You know, it'll drop off as the half-life drops off and that sort of thing.
So cortisol drops, you feel good.
And, you know, there are other products out there, like, you know, the clinical product, the Hydroxyburn Clinical, which has got other products in there like the Blue Ness and things like that, that actually will counteract that. Good evidence. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that supports the use of these ingredients into a single blend that justifies its use.
Yep.
And we know that habitual users, because there is good research around habitual users, and those are those people that take more than between 3 or at least 400 milligrams per day.
Yep.
That's a lot of people in that ballpark. They don't have the huge spikes. You become attuned to it. So if you think about...
And cortisol you're talking about.
I'm talking about cortisol, right? So I'm talking about the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis that lends itself to... We know we've got a catecholamine response. So anything you put in the body has a stress response.
Mm-hmm.
Food, drink, exposure to light, hot, cold, whatever.
Okay.
It all causes cortisol to go up, right? We can't avoid it, but it's been demonized, and we've talked about this before in episode one. But it's not like it goes through the roof and it stays there. It there's a half-life of under 60 minutes generally. So it will be metabolized and reutilized, and it'll drop off eventually, right? But if you are accustomed to using caffeine, you won't get a 300% spike in cortisol. There's no way in the world. Will it go up? Probably a little bit, but not like a naive user who's never had it before in their life. So, you know, that's where when you're looking at products and you're going, oh, well, this is in there and that's in there. It's like, okay, so caffeine's in there. Does that produce an increase in cortisol? Yes. But if I'm a habitual user, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference in my day.
No-brainer.
It's a no-brainer, right? Mm. So you look at it on a holistic perspective. Have a cup of coffee. It's the same as have a couple of cups of coffee. You're still going to have a large amount of caffeine.
Yeah.
You're still going to get a cortisol response from coffee.
I think I'd get a bigger one if I didn't have the cup of coffee.
For sure.
Especially before 10 a.m.
There you go, right? So, you know, there's a whole range of things. And if you're training in the morning, if you're a morning trainer, you know, that's what you want to do. You need to get up and about and get your workout done. I can't train in the morning. Never could. I'm an evening trainer.
I like the evening train as well.
Yeah, I just find it's just not my thing.
You talked about Parkinson's and some long-term degenerative diseases that we suffer, and caffeine at the moment is showing some great steps towards not going down that path. Is that the right way to say it?
To reduce your risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm heading to is a lot of people tend to back off their caffeine as they get older.
Mm.
Bad?
Not bad, but no need to.
No need to?
No. I don't know why they would do that.
Maybe the whole toilet thing. Sore knees, bad hips, reaction times.
I don't think there's any need to drop off your caffeine intake. I think that people get concerned about blood pressure, and this is where it matters, right?
Yep.
So if you are hypertensive, if you have high blood pressure and you're on medication for high blood pressure, then absolutely you're going to take something that gives you increased blood pressure. So that's where it's a balancing act.
Yep. What's worse, a little bit of blood pressure or the benefits of not?
Well, you don't want high blood pressure.
Okay.
Hypertension long-term, the little bit of benefit that you might get from some caffeine versus the guaranteed long-term negative effect of having long-term blood pressure and hypertension. So over 140 millimeters of mercury for your, you know, for your systolic and your diastolic and that sort of thing. So if you're clinically hypertensive, that's you need to manage that as a much higher priority than having a little bit of caffeine to maybe reduce your risk of Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Because you got to deal with health as it presents. Mm-hmm. So if you've got it right now and that's a problem, is caffeine going to give you high blood pressure long term? There's no evidence to suggest that that's going to happen. But if you've already got it, then you've got to manage your diet, including your caffeine intake and everything else along with
it's a lot bigger than caffeine.
It's not just caffeine to reduce that risk.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably what you're saying with perhaps an older population dropping their caffeine off. They're probably being told to do that because they're on medications.
Yep.
And in that case, just refer to your clinician. But I would say, your caffeine's not that important.
Mate, I'm pretty excited about where you've gone with all that.
Like, because it was a bit of a winding road, but I think we covered most of the stuff we wanted to get to.
Yeah, you've talked about side effects. You've talked about hormone interactions. You've talked about thermos and weight loss.
Yep.
Heart disease. Cognitive performance, training, using it pre-training, pregnancy.
Yep.
Somehow children got in there. I've got no idea, but children got in there as
well. Well, it's probably important to be aware of it. I can't believe that
nearly 2 million kids in America. That's crazy.
Mm.
Mate, any closing remarks on caffeine? Do you want to debunk a couple of myths? Do you want to
summarize? I think we've debunked a couple around caffeine. I don't know if it's debunking myths, but certainly it's not the big bad wolf.
Yep.
Certainly there are some bona fide long-term health benefits potentially. I'm not saying that you need to go out and have thousands of milligrams of caffeine every day.
No, you haven't said that either.
But but certainly in terms of there is some good research around long-term health benefits for some forms of cancer, some neurocognitive benefits long-term, reducing our risk of some of those, Alzheimer's, for example, things like that. There's some good data there. Gut health, things like that.
Okay.
Mm. So I think gut health is a big one. People are confused around, I think I touched on this, I might be repeating myself, but because gut health and microbiome and everything's very popular at the moment and everyone's talking
very
about
popular.
It. And, my view is that it's a link in the chain, right? It's mm-hmm. one of the important variables. Most people tell you that it's the most important, but they're probably the gut zealots of the world.
Yep.
Does caffeine and energy drinks and coffee have an impact on your gut microbiome? I agree, it probably does, but no one can tell me how and to what end. And I think we'll get there eventually, but we're not there at the moment. Until someone can show me that, I'm going to keep drinking, my coffees and so forth and my pre-workouts, because we'll adapt when the data's available rather than just go, we think it does something. I don't know what. But in the meantime, people are making a lot of money out of doing fecal testing and all this sort of thing. And it's best guess. That would be my suggestion to you in terms of that gut health stuff.
Yep.
It matters, but we're not where we think we are.
Well, mate, thanks for coming on board today.
Cool.
Really appreciate that. Caffeine's a big one. We're going to put up a few notes at the bottom of bodyscience.com.au/podcast. Mac, your Instagram, have you done any work on it since you've been on?
Is amazing.
Okay, there you go.
At the Dr. Mac. If you're not following me, you are missing out. Seriously.
Check out the cat.
The number one.
Out the cat.
I may have hit 1,000. No, I don't even think I've hit 1,000.
That'd be all those cat lovers.
Hey?
All the cat lovers.
I have a cat. His name's Bruce.
He's a legend.
And he's pretty cool. I'm not necessarily a cat person. You want to know a story?
Yeah.
I don't tell you the story because people go, Mac, you're a cat person.
Yeah.
I'm not a cat person or a dog. I'm an animal person. I'm a lover of animals.
This is a good story, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I had some... So I used to see this cat walking around in the street, right? Yep. My neighbours abandoned him, right?
Which isn't good.
They moved out and they left him behind.
Is that right?
Yep. Did the right thing, took him to the vet, tried to track down the owners. They didn't want him. They abandoned him, right? So I opened my door one day and he walked in and he hasn't left. And he might have put on 5 or 6 kilos since then because he lives pretty good life.
Keto cat.
But what are you going to do, right? You can't kick him out. He's a good little fella. He likes to sit on the couch and watch the football
with
me.
Watch the footy with you, yeah.
Yeah, he sits up. Yeah. So he's good. He's a good cat. He's a good friend. Yeah, so...
Bruce the Cat, catch him on Bruce's Instagram.
Bruce rocks. No, he can't have his own Instagram because I can't run my own, so I can't run two.
Nice. Thanks for coming in, mate.
Always a great pleasure.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.